Welcome to Claim Your Confidence, a podcast that will introduce you to the most powerful people in the world. No matter what obstacles you face, Claim Your Confidence will inspire and motivate you to go after the life you want. Are you ready to claim your confidence?
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Claim Your Confidence. I'm Lydia Finette coming to you from Newsstand Studios in Rockefeller Center. We are well into early spring here in New York City, and I am sitting in the studio with two amazing guests coming to me, one from Georgia and one from California. You guys, this is the first time I've ever done an interview like this, and I am so excited. It's usually one-on-one, and today we have two amazing women with incredible stories in their own right that really come together in the most unexpected and fun ways. So, Candace Nelson and Kristen Dunning, welcome to Claim Your Confidence.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
I'm so excited about this interview. So to give everyone a little bit of a backstory, I've met Candace a couple of times. I first met her, and you guys may know her as the founder of Sprinkles Cupcakes. And if you guys are sugar aficionados like I am, you would know that they are the best cupcakes in the entire world. And I can say that because I've had easily 300 over the course of my life. And Candace is a serial entrepreneur. You know, she founded Sprinkles Cupcakes. She now has these amazing pizza restaurants called Pizzana. And then in addition to that, she recently added to her portfolio the role of guest judge on Shark Tank. And that is where the story gets interesting, because today we have the incredible Kristen Dunning, who is the CEO of Gently Soap, who pitched and secured Candace from her interview on Shark Tank. I'm going to dive in first with you, Candace. I would love to know a little bit more about you, because I know you grew up in Indonesia, and I want to hear a little bit about your childhood. Who were you? You're such a bubbly, effervescent person. So was that who you always were?
That's so kind of you to say. I think I've always been a pretty happy person. I mean, I'm Candace Nelson now, but I was Candy Brown growing up. So with a name like Candy Brown, you kind of have to be
yes,
happy,
you do.
Positive. So yes, I grew up a lot of my childhood in Southeast Asia. I was born in Indonesia, but I certainly didn't live there for very long. I didn't live in any place for very long. I was constantly bouncing around as a child. Southeast Asia, the upper Midwest. I went to boarding school in New England and was just always having to enter new classrooms, make new friends, and get comfortable with the uncomfortable, which I know leads very much into your topic of choice, which is confidence.
Now, why were you moving around so much? That must have been a parental decision. You weren't probably roaming the earth on your own.
My dad was a lawyer for a couple different American multinationals. Now, if you were to ask my husband, it's because he worked for the CIA, but that's a whole nother podcast. So let's just stick with that. He was general counsel for an American company overseas.
And so you alluded to this, but moving around a lot definitely must make you get comfortable getting uncomfortable. Tell me a little bit about what that was like as a child to be bouncing from place to place.
Sure. I mean, you know, just as soon as you would get comfortable in a place and with your friend group, you're uprooted and had to kind of do it all over again. So I think that also contributed to my personality, where I kind of had to put on my tap shoes and do my little dance and make new friends, like make it all happen again. And I knew that if I didn't do it, no one else was going to do it. So I had to get in there and create my reality and fake it till I made it. Which, you know, as a child, I think it's scary. You don't know if people are going to accept you. And then add to that the fact that I was sometimes moving to a different country, a different culture. I mean, Indonesia is a Muslim country. I couldn't wear shorts outside. It was really hot. I was a kid. I wanted to wear shorts outside. So there were a lot of things coming at me. And so I just kind of learned to roll with the punches quite a bit, make my own reality, make friends really fast, and get on with it.
Do you think that sort of ability to sell and frankly sell yourself played a huge part in your role as an entrepreneur? Because, I mean, as you know, there's nothing more important than being able to sell your product or sell yourself when you're a founder or an entrepreneur, right?
Absolutely. I think it helped me to be a public-facing founder. And you're absolutely right. It's about selling. It's about telling a great story. And it's about doing so in a way that gets people to buy into you and want to be part of your journey get someone to want to be a friend of yours, right? All of that is related in some way.
It's interesting. Your name is Candy Brown, but, and obviously everything that has to go with you after that has to do with sweets, but that wasn't actually the path that you took. You went into investment banking after college. Isn't that correct?
I went into investment banking. I went to a very progressive liberal arts college. We used to spell women, and this was back in the day, W-O-M-Y-N. So we had fully expunged men from the equation. So I was very much about, like, you know, breaking through the glass ceiling. I wanted to get a job that could prove that I could make it in a man's world. And that's exactly what I did. I was recruited into the corporate finance department of an investment bank, working with technology companies at the height of the dot-com boom. I was one of very few women in my analyst class, and then went on to work for a technology startup, which, you know, I was in San Francisco. There were all these dot-coms, you know, going crazy at the time. And then, of course, the dot-com bust happened. And I was without a job. And I was just kind of left scratching my head and wondering what I was going to do next, because I'd sort of done, quote unquote, everything right. You know, I'd gotten into the good school. I'd gotten the prestigious job. I'd worked my way up. I'd proven myself. And now it was like, I was back at square one.
Yeah.
So then 9/11 happened. And not only was I without a job, but I was also just in this very dark period of time where I thought, what does it all mean? Right. And if life is so fleeting, what am I trying to prove? I'm sort of living by other people's expectations and standards. I'm trying to prove myself in a man's world. To what end? I didn't really love what I was doing. And so it led to this epiphany where I said, I want to do something joyful. I want to do something that brings a little joy to the world, has meaning, something I love. And so instead of going to business school, which was sort of the next logical step in my journey, I went to pastry school and reclaimed a love for baking that I'd had ever since I was a little girl.
What is that conversation like with the people around you when you're like, guess what, guys? I think you probably thought I was going to business school. I am going to a school that also starts with B, but it is baking school. What is that like to the people around you? Are they sort of like, okay, do it? Or was everyone just scratching their heads thinking, I mean, I lived through these years too, the September 11th hangover that lasted for many years, where a lot of us were like, what is going on? Like, you're young, life seems like it's completely taken a 180 overnight. So what did those around you say? And did that bother you? Because obviously confidence comes from being okay in here, right? It's an inside job, but it can also be shaken by other people's opinions.
Well, I think at that point, they thought it was kind of cute that I was going to go to pastry school. I'd have sort of a little hiatus before I went back to the real world. It wasn't really until I went to pastry school, came out of pastry school, and started plotting the world's first cupcake bakery that people were like, oh, this is more than just a phase. And then I got a lot of people cautioning against doing that.
And what did you say to them when they were saying that?
You know, I think ultimately I felt like I was on a path that was the right one. It felt really good to me. And even though it's hard when people around you don't understand your journey, they don't buy into your dreams, I think I had developed that self-reliance and that inner confidence through my childhood that I was okay with kind of standing on my own and being alone in this journey for a little while.
Yeah.
And so I just got to work. People may not understand when you're telling them, but if you start showing them, they're going to buy in eventually. So I just got to work. I started developing, you know, cupcake recipes. I started baking out of my kitchen and people started buying. And before I knew it and the world knew it, like, there was no denying that I was onto something.
That's got to feel great, by the way, just as an aside. And I could also see Kristen nodding while you were saying that about the entrepreneurial journey as well. And I'm excited to dive into Kristen's story as well, because I feel like there are going to be a lot of similarities in those moments.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, I
Kristen's
see this
story
vision.
Is so good.
Let me wrap up to get to the place where your stories intersect. So from Sprinkles, you go to Pisana. Tell me about Sprinkles, what happened there, onto Pisana, and then onto Shark Tank.
Honestly, Lydia, I just follow my gut. I mean, if it's tasty, I'm all in. And I met an incredible Italian chef who had just immigrated to the United States. I had one bite of his pizza and I was like, we got to do something together. I knew I could build a business around him and his product. I knew I could build a brand around it. And so we are actually about to open our 7th Pizzana in a couple weeks in Houston. We have 5 in the LA area, 1 in Dallas, 1 in Houston, and we're continuing our expansion. So that's been really, really fun. And then through all of these entrepreneurial ventures and some of my angel investing and speaking, and I came out with a book for aspiring entrepreneurs, I caught the attention of Shark Tank, the producers at Shark Tank, who asked me to come on the show, which has been really a lifelong dream for me. I'm a huge fan of the show. We watch it as a family. My boys love it. And so even after all the TV I've done on Cupcake Wars and Sugar Rush and the like, it wasn't until I got on Shark Tank that I finally got the street cred from my kids that I've been looking for all this time.
It's all about children's approval. God.
Absolutely.
I feel like every parent would say the same thing.
For like a minute.
I'm going to stop you there and dive into Kristen's story a little bit, because I think that it's so interesting to think about how these two things happen and your paths cross. But Kristen, start me off at the beginning of your life. You grew up in Georgia, and I always say we're Southern ladies, so.
Yes, I grew up in Georgia, but I always say that I was partially raised by my grandparents in Alabama. So on my dad's side, his parents, they had an 84-acre farm in Dixon Mills, Alabama, and that was kind of really integrated into my way of life, especially really young. We would go down there in summers, you know, Christmas break, spring break, stuff like that. And there was nothing there for an 8-year-old or born an 8-year-old child. There was nothing there besides like land. There was like 3 television stations and they weren't playing cartoons and kids shows. So I was very much forced to get like acclimated to being outside and being out in nature. And I was very imaginative as a child because of that. I just remember that the one place that I truly felt joy and felt free was outside and being surrounded by plants, whether it was the crops my grandparents were growing or just like the plants that were just in their like garden naturally. And as I started growing up as a teenager through like Georgia school, middle school, high school, and people start asking you like, what do you want to do? Like, what do you want to do in college? When I was younger, I was very much adamant on, I don't want to do the same thing that my grandparents did. Like, I don't want to go in the agricultural industry. But as I started touring colleges, I really felt like that was the place where I felt the happiest and I felt most to myself. And at that point, my grandparents had already passed on. So it was also the place where I was felt like I was mostly connected to them. So I found my own love through agriculture and everything because of the seeds that they planted within me and the roots that they laid down for me. I always do like agricultural puns. So that's also at this time, I am an eczema warrior, but I was going through the height of my battle with my skin, with my eczema. I was a teenage girl and my skin was like peely flaky. I would have to wear gloves. I was wearing turtlenecks to school because of how bad it was.
Oh,
I was very much ashamed with how it looked and how it felt. And I was constantly looking for a product that just didn't burn. I always say that, like, when I listen to other entrepreneurial stories, they're all like, I wanted to create this product because of this. And for me, it was literally just like a need of something. Like, I just want something not to hurt.
Yeah.
Like, literally, whatever that is, I'm willing to go for it. And I started realizing from that it didn't really matter what skincare products I brought home, because bathing is the foundation for skincare. Mm. And it's so rooted in our daily routine that I couldn't even like get up in the morning. I would like literally dread bath time because I couldn't get up. And I was like, my skin is going to burn if I take the shower. So it was just a lot. As I was like struggling with my skin and everything, I knew that I wanted to kind of like go back to that in order to find a solution. So when I was getting asked the question of what my dream job was or why I was going to college and like what I wanted to do, everything at that time, like everything I wrote down is literally like, I wanted to create natural products or be in product formulation for, I was like, Burt's Bees or something like that. But that's what I went to college for. I went to study agricultural sciences for natural product formulation.
Wow. So it was that specific. Like, you absolutely knew always what you were going to do. I feel like that happens so rarely to people. You know, most people are sort of meandering along, but you're, you know, you're leaving the farm and you're like, I know exactly where I'm going and where I'm headed.
that was my dream. So it was very much like in my head, like I wanted to create change and help people with skin like mine find joy. And I was nodding earlier when Candace was talking about her story because she kept saying she wanted to help others find joy. And that is such, so similar mm-hmm. for the both of us. I was very specific about it. And I thought I was going to go and work for someone else and do that. But I ended up stumbling into doing it myself, which is the best part. So yeah.
So Kristen, tell us about how you stumbled into, or realistically, how you methodically plotted to get your soaps made.
I always tell everyone that I never kind of intended to be an entrepreneur. I feel like some people like really gun for the entrepreneurship role in their life. I feel like I literally stumbled into it. I just wanted to research botanicals. And as a freshman at the University of Georgia, I was in this honors research dorm where we were pushed to basically start our own research projects in order to qualify for scholarship funding. So they made us research, and I had to figure out what kind of projects I wanted to do. And I immediately knew, I was like, I want to do medicinal plants and eczema. I didn't know what was going to come of that, but that was like immediately. I was the first person to submit my abstract. I was the first person to nail down a professor because I was just so like, this is what I'm doing. Like thinking back on it, I just thought it would be a great resume addition to when I go to apply for a job.
Yeah.
But I was also just so interested about it. And it so happened that when I was like pitching it to my research mentor, Dr. David Kanoff, who like signed on to the project with me, that his wife really suffered from eczema. So he immediately knew
wow.
what I was talking about. He got it. He was like, this is it. And in my head, like I had watched like this wave of natural products take over the world, like through high school. And I also knew that the natural products that were currently on the market, I couldn't use them. Natural should be better, but it's still causing a lot of burning sensation with me. And I want to figure out why that's happening and how can we use botanicals? Because plants should be good. I know that plants are good, but why are they causing so much irritation and reaction with my skin? And through my research, I ended up finding out like the dangers of essential oils. I ended up looking at like plant extracts and botanicals and how do you safely and effectively use botanicals in natural skincare in a way that gives you the beneficial properties that we're all craving and want, but doesn't react or make your skin overreact. So that was the essence of that research project.
As an entrepreneur, I think that there's something to be said for finding something you're passionate about, because it's almost like there's an endless amount of energy. There's a well of energy that doesn't exist for anything else except for things that you are that passionate about. So were you testing that on yourself then? Were you testing it on your advisor's wife? Like, what was the trial process at that point?
Yeah, so there wasn't actually a product. One of the things that we did at the very, very early stages in 2018 at research conferences was use our botanicals to make soap. And I wish I could tell you there was some really big mastermind behind why we chose soap, but it was really just there was low barrier to entry to making soap. And we were like, it's the base product for all skincare regimens. So here you go. And we made soap and we were handing it out like to people who came and talked, like sat at our talk at research symposiums. And we were like the most popular research talk of the evening because of that. People were like, if I go here, I get free soap. So there were like lines. And I like thought back to that moment and I was like, I'm gonna make soap again. So I retaught myself how to make soap in quarantine. And I was like posting about it on like Facebook, or like my mom would post about it. And people started asking, where can I buy it? Like, ooh, I'm gonna launch a Shopify store. And that day, like I put every bar of soap that I had made in quarantine on Shopify, and within an hour, it was all sold out. And I was like, that means I have to make more soap. And wow. the cycle just started to continue. And I was stuck in a soap business, which I love.
And then Gently Soap was born. Wow, what an amazing story. I love every piece of that. So this kind of brings us to the point of the story where you guys start to intersect. Candace, we talked a little bit about the fact that you had been sort of reached out to about becoming a shark. Kristen, how did Shark Tank become part of your world?
Yeah, so I guess like fasting forward through like the 2 years before I went to Shark Tank, I was just doing like collegiate pitch competitions and I was winning a lot of them, but that's all I was doing, and farmers markets. So that was my early traction. From the pitch competitions, people were telling me like, this can be a big brand. You just need to get it in front of some eye or like some national stage to really blow it up. And Shark Tank just seemed to be the idea that everyone was recommending to me. So I applied and I didn't expect to hear anything back, but I feel really grateful that this happened because I put in one application and I made it all the way through the first time.
Candace, tell me a little bit about the process of becoming a shark. Like, what is the training like? And I want to ask on both sides, and I don't know how much you can tell me about this, but I am fascinated because everybody who walks onto that stage seems to know exactly what they're doing. And I guess if you've been watching it for a while, it makes a little more sense. But they call you and they say, all right, are you interested in being a guest shark? So then what happens?
So if you, you know, have your wits about you, you say yes. And then you go through a series of interviews. There are a lot of players involved in Shark Tank. So between the studio and the producers and the executives and the network, there are a lot of heads on my Zoom calls. And I went through a series of those. And fortunately, they thought I would be a fit. And that's pretty much it. There's no training. I mean, I think they are definitely looking for people who are operators who've had their own success in founding and growing businesses and then leverage that success to then go on and invest in other businesses. So you have the pitches through the lens of an operator as well as an investor. I think once you have both of those skill sets and you have some presence on TV, you could be a good fit.
As an auctioneer, I have to ask this question. When you go in there and you, in your mind, are like, this is how much I'm going to spend, when you're sitting in that chair, are you like, you know what, I'm just going to mortgage my house and give away my life savings because I think I want to bet it all on the steel?
It is exciting. I think you just have no idea what those entrepreneurs are going to be asking for when they walk through the door. So it's hard to put a cap on it because you really just have no idea what's coming at you. And you may love this one and the next one, but you may not be into the next five. You got to go in with an open mind and an open wallet.
And how do you know when to speak? Like, how do you know who's going to be the first shark in? Do you want to be the first shark in? Is there a strategy? What was your strategy?
To speak. By the way, did you notice how I just interrupted you? That's what we do to each other. You're fighting to speak. It is a Shark Tank for a reason. We're fighting each other to get our questions in, for airtime, for all of it. It's ruthless.
All right, Kristen, your turn. So you go in and you're thinking to yourself, okay, I'm only going to give away this much of my company. But then you're standing there with the lights and you're telling your founder's story. What is going through your brain? I always wonder this when I see people with deer in the headlights, like, oh my God, what is happening right now? Like, what were you thinking when you walked out on that stage?
When I finally was like walking out, I think everything just left my mind. I was just like, oh my God, I'm like walking through the thing. And look, what Candace says is true. I actually didn't know who she was. They didn't give me her name until maybe like 3 days before. So I was like, Candace Nelson, like, what is Sprinkles? We don't have Sprinkles in Georgia. So I was like, oh my gosh. So I was just like going through all these things. I went and bought her book from like Books a Million. And I was like reading it on the plane to LA, like trying to figure out what this girl was about. And I was really excited. I also knew personally that the two most important things for me were I really wanted a female entrepreneur to invest. Yeah. So I was really excited that my guest shark was a woman. And I also really wanted someone who would almost, in a sense, become a co-founder, like almost to the brand. I was really tired of doing everything alone. I think that all solidified in that moment for me that I just really wanted someone who was going to be dedicated to building Gently Soap at least like half as much as I was. I wasn't set on a particular percentage. I think it was more about the person. I was like, let me ask the questions that I need to ask in order to like verify that this is the type of person that I'm trying to get like while I'm here.
But from my perspective, I didn't see that anxiety. I mean, she walked onto stage, she was glowing, she was like really focused and passionate. She looked the part, she told a great story. She had turned this incredible hardship into opportunity. You know, I'm a discerning when it comes to product. And I held that product and it was beautiful. It felt very artisanal and elevated. I don't typically like a lot of fragrance in my products, but I smelled it and it didn't bother me at all. It was lovely. It felt just so natural and, you know, aromatic. And so I was just very taken by the whole moment and realized that this was my company.
But you weren't the only one who felt that it was your company. So tell me about all the back and forth, because there were a couple of sharks who were in there who thought that the deal was coming to them. So Kristen, from your side, what are you seeing while all this is happening?
I will say I was actually shocked by how much of it was me watching the sharks talk to each other about my brand.
That's really funny.
sitting right there. I thought I was gonna, I like had all these like one-liners that I was like being prepared to say. If like Mr. Wonderful got like snappy with me, I was gonna be like, don't let me wash your, like make me wash your mouth out with soap.
Oh,
I was
that's
like
a good
ready.
One.
I was ready.
Oh, that would have been good.
And then I was just like watching Mark Cuban, Damon John talk about how they don't use soap and they use 3-in-1. And I was like, this is not how I expected this to go. And then I was just like thinking about like how much of the product I like wanted to share. I was like, well, let me introduce like the different soaps to you. And I was like getting all excited. But my favorite part was just like, everyone smelling it and like talking about like how subtle and everything it was. And I was like, they get it. Even like Lori was talking about how she understood. And then Candace, you were talking about how big the market was and how it was growing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad they understand why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm.
But then people start putting real numbers on the table.
Oh yeah.
You know, equity in the company for dollars. What is that? Was that what you thought it was going to be? Did you feel like that was lining up with what you thought? Were you like, oh my God, I'm going to have to give away the kitchen sink to make this happen? I mean, was there a walkaway number for you?
The thing that really took me for a loop was like Mr. Wonderful's offer with the royalty. I was like, sir, no. Like immediately.
Hard pass.
I was trying to like really keep my composure, but I was like, he wants like a dollar. I don't even remember what it was. It was like a dollar on every bar. And I was like, I'm like, what? And he was just like, your margins are so good. And I was like, I want them to stay that way.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Kevin at one point called me greedy, which I was like, I think that's just a rite of passage. Like, I feel like I'm finally, like, I finally belong. You called me greedy. Okay.
But then you guys got into the final portion of this where you were negotiating down to the 5%. So tell me about that moment and when the final moment where you were like, okay, we're here and I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Well, like I remember that they kept like interrupting me. They're like, you're negotiating too much. You're negotiating.
I remember that.
Too
much. Yeah.
And I was like,
this is my company.
Like, this is what I came here to do. And I was like, I was like making eye contact with Candace the entire time. I was like, are we still good? Are we here? And so I was very much like, this is part of the show. This is negotiation. And at that point, I had definitely like solidified in my mind that Candace was who I wanted because of, there was one thing that she said that she was like, I'm the type of like investor that you can call any time of day, any time of night. And like, I'll show up there. I'll be there for you. And I was like, that's what I needed her to say. And I was immediately like, oh, Candace. And then she was talking about passion driven entrepreneurs. And I was like, she understands like me, who I am. And also Mr. Wonderful. I really appreciate him putting an offer on the table. But he was talking about like CVS and Walmart, like primarily, and not really listening to the positioning that I was like trying to give. And Candace started mentioning 13 Loon and like beauty and everything. So I think at that point, I was just like, I'm going to lock in and get like the deal like solidified here. I was just really focusing on that.
Yeah. When you both walked away, did you feel good about it?
Yes. No, I felt exceptional. I immediately called my mom and I was like, she's amazing.
To Kristen's point earlier about being, I mean, it is really hard to be a solopreneur. I always think it's easier to have a partner in the business, but Kristen has an incredible family that have supported her and have lifted her up. And she's a really great friend community and church community, and she's very well supported. And I've had the opportunity to meet her mom and kind of get to know some of the folks in her world. So it's been really, really fun. But it's just, you can't not love Kristen Dunning and you know, just what she's done at such a young age from her dorm room.
I really love that story. You know, I'm emceeing the Female Founders Fund CEO Summit next week at the New York Stock Exchange, which is 200 female CEOs. It's the year of the woman, and we're celebrating how 2023 was a moment for women to break the glass ceiling, whether it be Taylor Swift taking on the world's economy, or it had to do with Barbie smashing every box office record with a female director and female funding. But the reality is, female entrepreneurs get 3% of funding. I mean, there is literally no funding out there for female entrepreneurs. And the number is even smaller if you are a Black or Brown founder. And so what I love the most about this story is watching you two lift one another up. Because at the end of the day, that's how this is all going to happen, right? We have to support one another, especially women have to support other women in addition to finding male allies to help us as well. Can I leave you guys with one question for both of you? Mm-hmm. As you think about Gently Soap in the next decade, what is going to happen to this brand? Tell me biggest dreams. Tell me what you want for this. Let our listeners know how we can help you.
At Gently Soap, we're a brand that we're bathing essentials for sensitive skin and eczema with real herbs and real joy. So we don't have essential oils, no synthetic fragrances, but we're providing a joyful botanical experience to people who haven't had it before through real flower herbal infusions that I created. So, and part of that is that we're really leading the conversation on the fact that essential oils may not be good for everyone to use, especially as they go through their household products, their bathing products, their skincare products, and how do we use botanicals in a safe and effective way. So I'm really excited to further drive that conversation through mass market plays, whether that be on a shelf of a mass retailer or launching more products that can be used widely throughout the home. I think in general, just providing essentials to people with skin like mine is my main goal to as many households as possible. So yeah.
It's fantastic. And Candace, how about you?
Well, I am really here as a partner to Kristen to support her in her goals to help, you know, unlock opportunities and open doors where I can, and really just to help her soar, and also to help her build her own personal brand, because I think she has a lot of potential there to be a thought leader in the space. And she's an incredible face of the brand.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, I always like to leave my listeners with a thought or a question at the end. And as you talk about lifting each other up and helping each other soar, I would challenge everybody who's listening today to think about one person in your own life who you could help do that for, because it's such an amazing way to see women working together. I hope that you guys will DM me and let me know how you're doing that. DM Candace, DM Kristen. But more importantly, go buy Gently Soap, ladies, because we all need this in our homes. Come on, let's do it. Candace, Kristen, thank you so much for being here. Give me social handles. Give me where we can find Gently Soap immediately, and then our listeners can get off this podcast and go get it.
Yeah, well, the first and foremost is gentlysoap.com.
Okay.
Then we're also on Amazon with Prime, and then we're also on 13 Loon.
All right.
At their Larchmont location in LA, and then also online. My Instagram is at gentlysoap, making everything super easy for you guys. And then my personal is at professionalplantgirl.
Love it. I love it. Candace?
I am on Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at Candace Nelson. And I also have a Substack called Sweet Success that I send out every couple of weeks. And you can also order pizza on a pizzas through Goldbelly, or if you're in LA or Dallas or Houston, come pay us a visit.
All right. We'll do both of those things. Well, thank you both so much for your time. I really appreciate you being here today. I'd like to always thank Joe, my trusty producer who makes everything sound great and helps me do everything that happens in the studio, and to Rockefeller Center and to Schmitz Fire, who sponsored this amazing podcast. So thank you all. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and I'll be back with you again next Tuesday. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. As an auctioneer, I have to ask this question. When you go in there and you, in your mind, are like, this is how much I'm going to spend, when you're sitting in that chair, are you like, you know what, I'm just going to mortgage my house and give away my life savings because I think I want to bet it all on steel? I just think as an auctioneer, I have to ask that question because I always wonder, because I see it, you know, as I'm standing on stage and I'm like, please don't keep going. You literally are not going to have a house to go home to if your hand keeps still going up. And so I was thinking to myself when I watch Shark Tank sometimes, like, I wonder if you've ever in your mind, you're like, 50,000 is my cap. And then you're like, I don't know, maybe I'll just keep going because it gets competitive and it's exciting.